This is Over the Night with Matt Harum on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Harum.
Welcome back in. This is Over the Night, SB Nation Radio. Matt Harum back with you. Let's jump back into college football with Jason Kirk. Covers college football for SB Nation. You can follow Jason's work on Twitter at Jason Kirk SBN. All right, Jason, first I want to get your reaction to the top 25. First, LSU. I mean, that was obviously a very nice win coming out of the gate, but they jump all the way into the top 10. Are there any surprises with you on that one?
It's a pretty aggressive leap, I think. If you watch the game, I think the first half really felt like, wow, LSU was really dominant here, you know. But then you watch the second half and you look at the total box score, and I think, you know, there's still a lot of big questions about LSU. You know, the passing game wasn't quite as good as hoped. You know, they got outgained on the day. They had, you know, a solid special teams day. I think they benefited from some poor Miami special teams, which, you can't always exactly count on a bunch of punts going out of bounds. Miami had a lot of penalties, things like that. You know, credit to LSU. They deserve to win, but I don't think it was quite dominant enough to merit, you know, any sort of a major reevaluation of the Tigers. I think, maybe we say they look nice, but I don't know if we say they look awesome.
Yeah, and it's easy to overreact after week one of the college football season, and I think I said they jumped into the top 10. They're actually sitting at number 11, coming down from 25. But when it comes to LSU, can we kind of look at them almost like the Jacksonville Jaguars this year of college football? Like, the Jaguars, for them to win, like, you don't want Blake Bortles to throw the ball 25 times a game. That's kind of how LSU is going to win this year, right? With defense and maybe Joe Burrow throwing, you know, not turning the ball over, but it'll be okay if he doesn't throw for over 200 yards a game.
Yeah. Both those teams win with, you know, you hand the ball to Leonard Fournette. You know, literally play for both of them. So.
Yes, exactly. No, without a doubt. So let's go to Washington. Is there any surprises for you that they are still in the top 10 after losing their game to Auburn?
I think that's actually a bit of good polling, I think. You know, for the slight overreaction to LSU, let's also show a little bit of patience with Washington, because if not for, say, a goal line fumble, you know, or a controversial, you know, targeting call, no call, you know, they could have very easily won that game. You know, I think in week one, I think we saw a lot of the big games where really they could have gone either way, and it's hard to change your mind too drastically on several of these teams based on, you know, what could have been just a play or two, one way or the other.
For sure. Jason Kirk is our guest, a college football editor for SB Nation. You can follow Jason's work on Twitter at JasonKirkSBN. Which loss is bigger this year in terms of that team's national championship aspirations, Michigan or Washington?
Probably Washington. Michigan has lots and lots of chances to rack up, you know, top 10 wins later in the season. Whereas Washington really, you know, cannot drop anymore here on out. And, you know, if anybody's going to make it into the playoffs as, say, a two-loss team, it's almost certainly going to be someone from the SEC West or the Big Ten East. Michigan happens to be in the Big Ten East. Washington is just, you know, they simply would not have any hope of making up any ground. And, you know, there is a chance that even the 12-1 Washington would be struggling again. But I think in that sense, you know, plus you factor in that Michigan's game was a true road game, which the committee has said it, you know, it cares about things like that. So Michigan, I would say, is definitely not out, but Washington is going to need to be on its absolute best behavior the whole rest of the way.
Oh, yeah, and they're going to probably need some help from the Pac-12, which was not a good conference last year in college football. So let's go to Notre Dame. They go from 12 all the way to 8. What was most impressive about that win against Michigan to you?
I would say Brandon Wimbush, the quarterback. You know, the defense played well, but we kind of expected both defenses to play well. Notre Dame looked, the offensive line, the rebuild offensive line, losing two top 10 draft picks and then still playing pretty well against a Michigan front that itself could have, you know, multiple top 10 picks. Notre Dame's offense looked good, but I think the difference was Brandon Wimbush coming in as, you know, looking capable as a passer, made a few pretty risky deep shots that happened to connect, but him running, you know, running the option offense, sort of, I feel like Notre Dame is pretty good about tweaking its offense every year. It doesn't always work. They always have some sort of a quarterback situation going on, but he looks to be a good fit. Him and OC Chip Long, a modern RPO style where he can use his legs, he can throw, but it's not entirely on him to throw 40 times a game or anything like that. So I thought Wimbush was the big standout factor for them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Do you think overall, I always wonder this when it comes to Notre Dame, and we almost had this situation at the end of last year had they not gotten blown out by Miami. We might have had a decision to make when it comes to Notre Dame and a team that plays in a conference. Overall, do you think it plays to Notre Dame's advantage that they're independent or not?
So far, I haven't, but it's one of those things where I think if we take the committee at its word and they say, okay, we don't look at these games as if they're groups of results. We look at each game as its own isolated event. We evaluate it based on just what the team did that day against the team it played. Ideally it doesn't harm or hurt Notre Dame in any particular direction. Its lack of conference status. I think there's a lot of people who would greatly prefer it if Notre Dame, say, had to win a conference to make it in. But as we saw last year, if you're a famous enough team, you don't have to win your conference to make it in.
Yes.
You don't even have to win your division to make it in. Let's just say no Bama fans should be complaining about Notre Dame being able to make it in as an independent. I personally don't have a problem if they're demonstrably one of the four best teams, then they belong in the playoffs. Simple as that.
Jason Kirk is our guest, covers college football editor for SB Nation. You can follow Jason's work on Twitter at JasonKirkSBN. So a pretty convincing win for Virginia Tech yesterday. They move all the way up from 20 to 12. That game yesterday against Florida State, does it say more about Virginia Tech and how good they're going to be this year, or more about Florida State and how far they have to go?
Probably the last. It was a surprising result. It was impressive result, a pretty amazing job by a defense that had gone through a ton of attrition from the NFL draft to injuries to suspensions to on and on, and to come out and, shut down a defense or an offense full of, blue chip talent. But it's yet another game from week one. It felt like just every big game was like this, where if you look closely at the numbers, you realize, if they played again, you could get a totally different result. It was, there were six fumbles in the game. Virginia Tech recovered all six.
Yeah.
That is extremely statistically unlikely. Florida State came up half a yard short of a touchdown. There was a punt block for a touchdown. You changed just a handful of things, and it very well could have been a tie game in the fourth quarter. So good quality road win for Virginia Tech, but again, in my mind, I'm not really thinking of it as the blowout that the scoreboard said it was. As ridiculous as that might sound.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's a lot of turnovers in a game. I'm curious about this. The top two picks in the draft this year, Baker Mayfield going to Cleveland and Saquon Barkley going to the Giants. Which offense? It was hard to tell. Penn State, that was a weird game, obviously, with Penn State really struggling. Oklahoma had no issues whatsoever. But if I were to tell you to pick one offense that's going to struggle more this year without one of their top draft picks, without one of their guys who was a top draft pick last year, Penn State or Oklahoma, which one do you think it's going to be?
Well, I would have guessed Oklahoma, just because Baker Mayfield, statistically speaking, one of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time, and Saquon Barkley, a very good running back, but not quite to that level. I think adding on to that, compounding the loss of those players, I mean, granted, we know Oklahoma had an exciting follow-up in Kyler Murray. We just hadn't seen him actually on the field in quite a while. But compounding that is Oklahoma still has Lincoln Riley, whereas Penn State no longer has Joe Moorhead, OC, now the head coach of Mississippi State. And Mississippi State didn't exactly struggle in its week one game.
No.
Whereas Penn State was taken over time by a good team, Appalachian State, a good team, a team you probably should not schedule in week one. But if you do find yourself playing them, you're going to need more than, 10 points in the first half, like that. So far, you'd have to say Penn State is missing its guys the most. I think the problem there is they're missing, several guys.
Oh, no, for sure. Jason Kirk is our guest, covers college football for SB Nation. He's a college football editor on that website. You can follow Jason's work on Twitter at JasonKirkSBN. Okay, one team that I really like this year, and I'm curious your opinion on this, is West Virginia. Will Grier, I think, is definitely a Heisman hopeful. That offense is astounding. But how concerned are you about the defense? Because that is the problem when it comes to West Virginia. Just kind of, what is the ceiling for this team this year, do you think?
Well, a great week one, but we don't really know what that means. You know, we don't know how much a win over Tennessee is worth. But I like the way that my colleague Bill Connolly puts it, which is that West Virginia's starting 22 is, you know, top 20 quality, pretty clearly a second best in the Big 12. We just have no clue what depth they have beyond that. You know, if they have great injury luck, this could be a 10-win team. But beyond that, it's just a very hard team to predict. I think defensively, obviously, that's the thing to improve. But when you have Will Grier and you have all those experienced receivers in that offense, probably not as big a concern, you know, as it is for other teams. So I think with West Virginia, the thing is just how long can you keep the same core, the same core group on the field?
Right. No, for sure. Jason, let's go to the top of the poll. How close do you think Alabama and Georgia are this year in terms of just talent? If we're going on paper talent depth chart, how close are they this year?
Georgia's closing the gap. I mean, we saw that on the last year. We saw it on National Signing Day. I think this particular season, you'd probably give Alabama the edge still, but, you know, next year might be getting closer and closer year after that. The Dogs might finally overtake them. Georgia, you know, they've yet to be tested, but then again, so is Bama. They actually played a Power 5 team, and both those games looked about the same. I think with Tua taking over as the starting quarterback, whether Nick Saban likes us to describe it that way or not, it does give Bama an entirely different dimension. Their passing game looked, I don't really think we've ever seen Bama with that complete of a passing and running attack at the quarterback position. I think it's pretty easy to think of this of Bama as having a legit Heisman contender at quarterback.
Right.
Which even in the AJ McCarron era, when he was a Heisman finalist, it was more of a career appreciation kind of thing. Whereas this one is like, no, he very well could win the thing. And that's not really a September overreaction. I'm not predicting he will. It's just it's very easy to envision that happening. Whereas with Georgia, Jake Fromm, excellent player, but will they go, with Georgia, I think you're probably going to still see more of a classic Bama kind of approach where it's the run first.
For sure. You know? I don't think it's an overreaction to say what you said about Tua. I mean, he's a different kind of a quarterback, which I think could lead to a different style of offense for them this year. Final question for you, Jason. Really appreciate the time. You were talking about overreaction. So Florida sneaks into the top 25. They take care of Charleston Southern 53-6. I mean, it's Charleston Southern, but their offense certainly looked pretty good. Should we overreact and say, look, Florida's offense will definitely take a step forward this year compared to last year?
Yeah, it should take a step forward. You know, I think we can trust in Dan Mullen. There's more experience at the quarterback position. There'll always be talent. I think there's more skill talent there than there has been in recent years. I think it's totally fair to expect the offense to, you know, jump up from, you know, it's been the top 60 or so at best for the last few years. It's, you know, top 40, top 30 offense. If you want to set that as like a goal, I think that's totally reasonable.
Jason Kirk has been our guest, covers college football for SB Nation. He's an editor. You can follow Jason's work on Twitter at JasonKirkSBN. Hey, thank you very much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We are back after this on SB Nation Radio.